Welcome back to Not Too Busy to Write. I'm Penny Winsor, author and book coach. Today, I'm in conversation with not one, but three wonderful guests to discuss the Women's Prize discoveries. Set up by the Women's Prize Trust and partnered with Curtis Brown Creative, the Curtis Brown Literary Agency, and Audible, the Women's Prize Discoveries is a prize and a development program for unpublished women writers in the UK and Ireland. Today, I have with me Kira Finan, literary agent at Curtis Brown and one of the 2026 judges. Also with us is 2022 shortlistee Niamh Navoylan, author of the extraordinary debut Ordinary Saints, which was published earlier this year. Ordinary Saints was an inaugural winner of the PFD Queer Fiction Prize, a Waterstones Debut Fiction Prize shortlistee in 2025, and a Books Are My Bag Reader's Award Fiction shortlistee in 2025. It was also one of my personal favourites of the year. Joining us is Alice True, a 2024 shortlistee from the Women's Prize Discovery, who has recently secured a two-book deal for her debut dark fantasy, The Hungry Dark. Today, they're all very generously sharing all of their wisdom about the prize. The deadline for the Women's Prize Discoveries 2026 is the 12th of January, and it's open to all women in the UK and Ireland over the age of 18, writing in English, in any adult fiction genre, who is unpublished and unedited. All of the links to read the details are in the show notes. I hope today's conversation inspires you to get those 10,000 words off your laptop and into that submission inbox. As you'll hear today, it is a truly life-changing prize, not just for the winner, but for the longlistees and shortlistees as well. This series of the podcast is brought to you by award-winning UK-based audiobook app, Zigzag. Zigzag's aim is to make reading easier and more accessible, engaging and sustainable so that everyone can enjoy more books. I'm obsessed with audio, as you know, and it is brilliant to have the option to choose an independent audiobook app that is subscription-free, great value and an ethical consumer best buy. Zigzag has an exclusive offer for Not Too Busy to Write listeners. Simply download the Zigzag app, that's X-I-G-X-A-G, and use the code TOOBUSY to get your second title completely for free. All of the details are in the show notes. Huge thank you to Zigzag for sponsoring the series. Enjoy the episode. Alice, Niamh, Kira, thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you for having us.
I'm going to take you one at a time, first of all, but Kira, let's start with you. I would love to hear about how you got into agenting in the first place. What was it in specifically about agenting that drew you to it?
Well, when I was in university, kind of deciding what I wanted to do after, I didn't really know what an agent was until I did a master's in publishing and we had a talk from a literary agent, and it kind of was in the back of my mind. And then after graduating, I kind of went into the trenches of trying to find a job in publishing, which was awful. And it was the time of like unpaid internships, which weren't really, you know, a thing that I could kind of consider. So that was in Ireland at the time. And I kind of decided I might move to London because I think there's just obviously more opportunity here. And it kind of was more coincidental in applying for an internship at Curtis Brown. I had heard of it as kind of, you know, one of the big literary agencies here. And miraculously, I got it and moved over. And then, yeah, I was here for 6 weeks as an intern and an assistant role came up. So I kind of more fell into it, you know, accidentally. But since then, seeing obviously what an agent does, kind of the whole production behind the book, I just really fell in love with that and fell in love with like being at the very start of the journey. I think there's something so special about finding a writer kind of in those such early stages, and especially kind of getting to work with them editorially. Like I love to do that with all my authors. So you kind of getting the great side of like the creative process, but then the kind of thrill of obviously getting a deal for an author, which calling an author up to say that their book is like going to be published is just like second to none. So yeah, that's kind of the shortened version of the journey.
And you're an assistant to Johnny Geller. What was it like to kind of work under somebody like that and learn under something like that? And then also, how does that transition happen from assisting to starting to grow that list yourself?
So yeah, I started actually working for Johnny Geller and another of the senior agents, Sheila Crowley here. So it was quite busy working for both of them. They have huge lists of like incredible authors. So it was kind of, I wouldn't go as far as saying like a baptism of fire, but it was like, you know, there's a lot to learn here. But like watching them both kind of, and the way that they agent, which is there's some similarities and some differences. Like, it was just really incredible, and kind of seeing their approach to firstly like editing to obviously like negotiation specifically, that's been so interesting. Was such a good grounding in thinking about how, when the time would come for me to do my own list, like how I would want to be as an agent. But it is a longer process. Like I was an assistant for 4 years. I kind of moved into just working in Johnny's office. But I think like you kind of do need at least like 2 to 3 years. Well, I did anyway, to like really kind of learn the ropes and kind of get a really good grounding. And then I think it was during COVID that obviously we were at home so much, like there was a little bit more time to really think about what I might want to do and what I might want my list to look like. And I've always been like a huge fantasy fan, which I think so many of those books is probably the reason like why I'm here today. So I thought more about kind of starting to build that up. And that kind of came at such a great time where romanticy and like book talk started to take off. And I think like there was always readers of romanticy, and I was one of them before that was really coined. But yeah, it was kind of a good moment of like luck as well, because I think there wasn't really anybody else doing that specific type of book talk book, as it were. And yeah, from there, I just started to gain a bit more momentum. I became an associate agent, which I think is a bit more like you're taking the next step in terms of working on some of your kind of managers or authors in a more like kind of senior capacity, but also then having the freedom to kind of run on your own, which is both like great and exciting, but a little bit scary when you're doing everything for the first time. And yeah, since then, like I was promoted to like agent fully at the start of this year. But kind of classically in publishing, you're doing that job for like a year or so kind of before you get the title. But yeah, it really kind of is like learning as you go. Like I think I'm so lucky to be at Kurz Brown because there's a wealth of knowledge and like it's such a big, you know, company. So there really is like, God, if I added it up, hundreds of years of experience, I would say, between everybody who works here. So yeah, and I think since then it's just been great to kind of also find my own rhythm and like obviously taking what I know from both, you know, Johnny and Sheila and other agents I've learned from here, but kind of also finding my own way and like doing things my own way has been really nice. And in certain circumstances that's worked really well. So yeah, it's been a bit of a whirlwind, but also 7 years. So it's been, it's not been that quick of a journey. But yeah, no, I'm thrilled to be working with some like incredibly talented authors. And also like the fact that I'm doing a genre that I've always loved. Like sometimes I do have to be like, I can't believe I'm getting paid to do this. But yeah, it's obviously not all roses and sunshine, but for the most part, it's such an exciting kind of job to be in. And this is such a great company, I feel like, to have grown in.
I think this is so great to talk about because I think people, when they often think about agents, it feels like very rarefied, very on a pedestal. And to hear you talking just about a passion for the genre that you've chosen to specialize in, and I think that's really important to say. Tell us a little bit more about your specialty, about your area of interest as an agent, what you love to represent.
Yeah, definitely. I think my list probably at the moment is like 70% fiction and 30% nonfiction. I do like to do a bit of nonfiction, you know, because I'm interested in it, but also it's nice to supplement like 150,000 word manuscripts that are fantasy with like a 50-page proposal. It kind of just like is a nice little breather. But I've also worked with some incredible kind of people in like the health kind of politics space as well, which is great. But I think, yeah, my speciality is kind of becoming like fantasy or like SFF generally, but I don't do as much sci-fi. Anything kind of genre leaning. I also love doing like kind of romance and kind of everything, I suppose, on like the more commercial end of it. But I really love it. Like I think fantasy as well, like I think with everything going on in the world, is such a nice genre to do. It's so escapist. And like, you know, I think in these times, it just feels like I've kind of very much landed on my feet in doing something that I did have a love for before. But I think the publishing industry can be quite fickle because I'm sure, you know, the trends kind of come and go. So it's, you kind of have to be aware of like what is trending and kind of slightly pivot, but also maintaining like that kind of solid taste of your own is an interesting one to kind of think on. And I think romanticy and fantasy broadly, obviously, like I said before, there was always readers there, and I think there will always will be. But yeah, I think there's a bit of industry fatigue at the moment because we keep hearing like, oh, romanticism's dead now, but then you see a, you know, huge deal in the bookseller or whatever. So I think the readers just want more.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm like, long may that last, obviously. That would be great. But I always think like great writing, no matter the genre, will always kind of find its place in the industry and find its readers.
Mm-hmm. I work with nonfiction writers, and when I'm editing proposals and I'm recommending people go out on submission and stuff, one of the things I always say, and I don't know whether, well, possibly you agree with this, I would say when everyone's putting a list together of agents to submit to, apart from picking the people that really call to them and feel really right for them, is to always include a couple of young agents on their list, always.
Yeah, I think so. And like, I think the younger agents, I think there's kind of a misconception that they have lots of time because normally they're probably working on, you know, kind of other authors for, you know, senior people, although that might just be Curtis Brown. I don't know, obviously, how other agencies work, but they have this, I obviously like the hunger to want to like achieve and succeed. And I think like that goes so much into like going that extra mile for kind of new authors and kind of having the headspace of like making those connections with younger editors who are also obviously of the same mindset, who want to like make a name for themselves. So yeah, I think kind of if you seriously, you know, want to be agented and kind of get, you know, obviously be published, I think considering kind of the younger agent is definitely a smart move.
Mm. And then this idea then as well, as a newer author, you can grow, you're both growing your professional careers together in the same direction, which I think is really lovely.
Yeah, completely. One of like the kind of early authors I took on is a lovely author called Hazel McBride. And like, in a way, it's so nice because we're a similar age as well, like kind of coming up in the industry together. And that's such a lovely feeling. So yeah, I would agree with that.
Niamh, thank you so much for coming here as well today. And I would love to first of all dive into your debut novel, Ordinary Saints, for which you were shortlisted in, was it 2022 for the Women's
Book? Yeah, 22. Yeah.
22. Came out earlier this year. It is absolutely magnificent, first of all, let me say.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to start, I guess, at the beginning of what really drew you to writing about this topic. First of all, actually, you know what? No, I think, first of all, tell the listeners just a very brief description about what it's about so that they can understand why I want to know about what drew you to this topic.
Sure. So the novel is called Ordinary Saints, and it has a slightly outlandish hook, which is that it's about a queer woman called Jay. She's Irish, but she's living in London. And at the beginning of the novel, she gets a call from her parents informing her that they're in the process of making her dead older brother a Catholic saint. And then that kind of triggers a huge amount of emotion for Jay. It kind of drags her back into stuff from her past that she's been really laboring to suppress for quite a long time. And that's kind of her working through that and thinking about her relationship with her brother, with her parents, with herself. Is really the meat of the novel after that point. And it has a very clear spark moment. And so in similar to Kira, around kind of 2020, like lots of us, I was doing a lot of thinking about my life and what I wanted it to look like. I was doing a lot more writing than I had been for a long time. And I really was finding that material around religion, faith, my own upbringing in a Catholic family, a Catholic school, a Catholic country, that was all just kind of bubbling up to the surface. But I had this feeling that I'm sure is familiar to lots of writers, that I couldn't quite find the hook that was going to get me to turn it into a story.
Mm-hmm.
And then in October 2020, I read a news story about this Italian teenager called Carlo Acutis. At that time, he was being beatified. He's more recently, in the last few months, officially become the first millennial saint. And I was just completely obsessed with this story. So this guy, like, he was 2 years younger than me, but he died when he was 15. And he's moved through this process of canonization really quickly. But at that time, despite having grown up Catholic, I didn't know the Catholic Church was still making saints. I certainly didn't think they were making saints who were born in 1991. And at that time, they also put his body on display in the way they would more ancient saints, but instead of being in like robes or something. He's in jeans and a hoodie and like a pair of Air Max, which is very disturbing, but also just gave me this kind of immediate vision of how through this process, these very ancient traditions are colliding with modern life. And quite quickly, I was like, this is something I want to write more about. For a little while, I wondered actually if I might write about it as nonfiction. But then quite soon, I realized this is it. This is the hook for all this thinking and writing that I've been doing about faith. And it ended up being taking me in so many surprising directions that I didn't expect.
I think that is such a good word for what it's like to read Ordinary Saints as well, that it is quite surprising. It is both very sort of, it feels incredibly complex and deep, but at the same time, there is somehow a lightness to the way you handle the topic, which is really, really beautiful. That kind of really incredible intersection of these two different lives, Jave's, you know, contemporary life in London and then this kind of old world coming to kind of collide with her. But I think one of the things that I found most incredible about it, aside from all of that, was this idea of memory and how we remember the dead and the process of beatification and how what it was going to take away from Ferdia the man and create someone who was a saint but no longer a man, and that kind of what that would feel like for actual family members to go through. Have you read much experience of what it was like for family members going through this beatification process?
So I've read a bit, and I did quite a lot of research, and in particular I'm really interested in the case I mentioned, Carlo Acutis. He's got two younger siblings. But they bizarrely were born after he died. And so they've only known him as this kind of saintly figure. And so in lots of ways, like what I did in the book is less dramatic than a lot of the real stories. But yeah, I've read stories where you see families really being kind of brought closer to their faith and to God through this process. You know, there's a candidate in the north of Ireland called Claire Crockett, who was a nun who was working in Peru when she died in an earthquake. And she's now at the beginning of this process, and her sisters are really leading it. And they're, you know, say that their faith has been strengthened by kind of her memory. But then there are also cases of families who do hate it. And, you know, I think there of a candidate called Dorothy Day, who was this incredible social justice activist in the US. She founded lots of really kind of great social justice organizations. She was super involved in kind of Catholic trade unionism, and her children and grandchildren were like, this is not right. This isn't what she's going to want. Like, she was always about lifting others up. She was always about collective efforts to kind of advance Christian values. She would hate for this really expensive process entirely focused on an individual to be built up around her. There's also a fascinating detail in that case that as a young woman, she had an abortion, which she said that she regretted. But now the church, in kind of advancing her cause for sainthood, instead of focusing on all her social justice work, a lot of the time they talk about her as kind of a role model for, you know, anti-choice politics. And so her family have also really fought back against that. They're like, that's an abuse of her memory and of the complexity and nuance that's involved in kind of any human life. And so, yeah, I was reading loads of these real stories and just kind of, I tried to let them percolate into a version of this story that ultimately was a bit quieter than I thought it might be. Like, it doesn't have these kind of huge social issues coming through in any great way. But I think that core question of what it feels like to have your loved one's memory get taken away. I think that's an interesting question this canonization process raises, but I think it's something that's super universal, that all of us have struggled with the way that someone we love is being remembered.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I would love to hear about how you went from kind of really nailing that kind of understanding what it was that was going to be at the core of this story. Where were you at when you found out about the Women's Prize discoveries? And were you, for instance, like, had you completed a manuscript? or where were you at?
I guess I submitted at the beginning of 2022. I think at that point, by the time I heard that I'd been shortlisted, I had about 40,000 words. Mm. So I was about halfway through a first draft. But at the point that I submitted, I think for me, it was really kind of more of a statement of intent to myself. It wasn't that I entered with the expectation of getting anywhere, but I'm quite cagey about my drafts. I don't really like to share them with anyone early on, which is quite frustrating now for my agent and other people who work with me. And I think I had been sitting on my own with this project for probably a year and a half at that point. And so I was thinking I need to prove to myself that my intention is ultimately to get this out into the world, that this isn't something that's just going to live in my spare room forever. And so that was kind of what really gave me the push to enter Discoveries, I think. And I definitely didn't expect that it would kind of flower in all the ways that it has since.
Well, I would love to hear a little bit about what that process was like from first the long list and then the short list. What kind of support came through the Discoveries Prize?
So, I mean, really quickly, it was clear that it was just a really lovely space and that it is more than a prize, that, you know, the Women's Prize describe it as a development program. And very quickly, it was clear that they were making a long-term commitment to us as authors, rather than just being like, we're going to give you this one bauble and then you're on your own. And so I guess that the first major thing that happened was that we were that year invited to the Women's Prize ceremony in June. And the really key thing that happened there, it was really incredible to go to the party. And one of my favorite authors, Ruth Ozeki, won that year. And so I was, I was just thrilled to be there for that. But the key thing was that I then met the rest of my cohort. And we all kind of exchanged numbers. We obviously established a WhatsApp group. And that now in the 3.5 years since then, they've become just this kind of core support network for me as a writer through the publishing process. And they've just become friends, really, really good friends. And so that was something that became a kind of sustenance that I definitely didn't expect from the prize. But also, we've just had these kind of ongoing relationships with the Women's Prize, with Curtis Brown, with Audible. There's, you know, lots of different opportunities have come up over that time to kind of learn a bit more about publishing, to meet kind of a wider range of writers and people in publishing. It's been pretty incredible.
I think just the need for community, I cannot overstate this enough for anyone listening who has not yet published. The need for community as a writer is so intense because we spend so long on our own with our writing. And then the publishing process is not like being a writer. It's a very different process. And to have a community around you is so important, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think to have a community of writers, in that I have, you know, lots of incredibly supportive friends and family, but I think it's actually just difficult to understand what writing a novel actually involves unless you've done it. And what those like long hours just sitting on your own, like battling with a Word document, like what that actually feels like. And, you know, my sisters, one of them's a doctor, the other one is a psychologist. And so if I go to them and I'm like, this story that I've made up in my head is really giving me trouble today, you know, it doesn't feel particularly affirming for them to be like, oh, tell us more.
Oh, yeah, that really sounds really hard.
Exactly. So I think that having, writers who can just hold space for you wherever you are. I mean, and, you know, it's important to keep things in perspective, but also it is tough. Writing a book is a slog. And so having people that can walk the path with you and offer really kind of constructive advice when you're coming up against some kind of block is really important, I think.
Mm-hmm. And the prize itself, did it? The organization in general, did it help connect you with the person who eventually became your agent, or did you go out and submission the kind of regular old-fashioned way? How did that come about?
So I had a kind of extremely privileged experience back in 2022. So at the same time, I also submitted to another prize. So I also submitted the novel to the PhD Queer Fiction Prize. I was kind of hedging my bets. I truly did not expect that both of them would turn out as well as they did. And so I, at that time, had interest from two different agents. And that put me just in this really lovely position that's extremely rare for early writers that early in their process, where I could make kind of a judgment between two different agents. And that was, so I did sign with my agent at that point. And then that meant that, when I finished the manuscript, things moved a lot quicker than they often do, because I didn't have to slot that agent submission process into the middle. And it was just lovely. Like I said, I am not a huge sharer of work. So I actually, even though I signed with my agent at that point, about halfway through the manuscript, I was like, I'm going to finish it on my own and then I'll share it with you. But then to immediately have kind of an agent's eye and have that support was incredibly useful.
I mean, I feel like there's probably no better advertisement than what you've just said for why everybody should enter prizes. Just everybody should do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, and I don't think I, even though, the winner of Discoveries gets an agent, even though that is like described as the prize, I don't think I had quite processed the fact that there would be agents reading my work as part of the prize, like that would be part of the judging process. And that is, yeah, that my work would be in front of agents, that those kinds of opportunities might be coming my way, really wasn't something that occurred to me. But, you know, even if it's that it like plants a seed in someone's mind, even if they don't make an offer of representation right away, that your work is out there, it's like starting to potentially kind of ripple in the world. I think that's a really powerful thing, and then people shouldn't underestimate it.
Alice, I would love to come to you now. Thank you so much for being here today. You were a shortlistee in 2024 with The Hungry Dark. You have gone on to be represented by Kira here today. And you've since got a 2-book deal. Your first book is coming out in, is it 2027? Is that right?
2027, yes, that's
first
right.
First of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's amazing. I want to hear about your experience of those early days where you were thinking about pressing submit on that submission for the Women's Prize Discovery. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, for me, it was quite impulsive. So I've always written. I've always done it in my spare time as a hobby. I love it. But I had never considered it seriously. It had never occurred to me that someone might actually want to read this, or that it might one day sort of go out into the world and be in bookshelves. It was January 2024. It was the weekend before the deadline. And I was scrolling Instagram and I saw an advert from the Women's Prize Discoveries setting out sort of this prize. And I follow a lot of bookish content, so I'd seen sort of prizes before, but a lot of them had quite a high barrier to entry. You know, they cost money, or you've got to have a finished novel, or you've got to write something new to a particular theme or brief. And what was amazing about Discoveries was, I mean, it's free for all to enter. You don't need a finished manuscript. You need 10,000 words, which is, you know, about 3 chapters. And I had that languishing away on my laptop, hidden away, unseen by anybody. And so I thought, well, why not? I'll just give it a go. I was home alone that weekend, so I had a bit of time on my hands. And I don't know what exactly it was, but I thought, I'll give it a go. I'll press send. So I spent that weekend reading through my 10,000 words, you know, polishing up, fixing the typos, writing my synopsis, sent it off. Never expected to hear anything back or for it to go anywhere. And then a few months later, I got the email saying I'd been longlisted, and then shortly after shortlisted, and it was incredible. And I'm so glad that I did, because genuinely, that's been life-changing. And I think if I hadn't entered, I don't think I would have submitted to agents or thought about publishers or got this book deal. So it really has changed things for me in ways that I never would have expected.
Oh, that is so interesting to hear. So again, it's almost like what Niamh was saying, is it's almost like an intention, right? You're just going to take that risk. You're going to set an intention. Someone else for the first time is going to see your words. Completely life-changing. Tell me a little bit about The Hungry Dark. I'm sadly have not read it because it is not available to me.
No.
Tell us a little bit about it.
So The Hungry Dark is a dark fantasy. And I guess it's a dark fantasy, both metaphorically and literally, because it's set in a world where people have to avoid the dark at all costs. If you go and find yourself in true dark and trapped, there are monsters there, bad things happen, people disappear, and no one's entirely sure what happens to them. No one comes back, with the exception of our protagonist, who is a young woman called Hesper Stornoway. And years ago, she did go into the dark to hunt for her sister, who has disappeared, and she came back a little bit different. And at the time where we join her, you know, her life isn't going particularly well, and a set of circumstances happen, which mean that she has to go back into the darkness. And she meets the person who rules there, who's this sort of charismatic, mysterious figure, and makes a bargain to get his help to find her sister.
Mm. Oh, well, I'm definitely hooked. I can't wait. I hope I get a proof next year. So the thing that I love about this is that Niamh and Alice, you've both written incredibly different books.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the same prize. And I think this is one of the things I love most about Women's Prize Discoveries, is that there is no, it doesn't have to meet a particular genre, which is very unusual for a prize. Tell me about the process then, going from shortlistee to being represented by Kira. What did that look like?
So I was extraordinarily lucky because there was a wonderful agent on the judging panel that year who wasn't Kira, but was one of her colleagues. And so she reached out to me afterwards saying, my colleague and I have been looking for a project to work on together. We're looking for something in the fantasy space. We really liked what we read of your novel. Do you have more? And I did. I had about 30,000 words squirreled away, so I sent them across. I was extraordinarily lucky that they offered me representation at that point, you know, on faith. I hadn't finished the book. They didn't know I could. But we went from there. So again, like Niamh, I was very lucky very early on to have the support there and the advice and the counsel and also the accountability, because as I said, I've been writing as a hobbyist for years and never really finished something full length. But suddenly when you've got someone waiting at the end of the email, waiting for your manuscript, there's nothing like that for motivation. So I then went ahead and finished drafting the novel that year. Kira and my other agent, Jess, came back with the edits. I finished editing this year and sent it off, and now we've got the book deal.
Amazing. And so what part of the process are you in right now? Are you done, signed off that first book, or are you still in the process of edits at the moment?
I'm expecting edits to land in my inbox next week. On book one, but I'm already writing book two. So sort of drafting a little bit, but then I'll have a pause and go back into the previous work and edit and go from there.
Amazing. So you've got a very busy 18 months or so ahead of you, 2 years ahead of you.
But a very exciting 18
very
months.
Exciting. Yeah. Oh, amazing. Kira, I would love to come back to you because you are a judge this year. I would love to hear about what the kind of things that you're looking to see, the kind of things you're excited to see. Tell me a little bit about that.
Of course. I'm thrilled to be on the judging panel this year with some incredible people. I think first and foremost, what we're looking for when it comes to submissions and discoveries is promise over polish. I think the aim of the prize, and obviously as a kind of development program, is to reach people who maybe didn't consider sharing their work, or maybe they've had, you know, as sometimes we all do, ideas that you think on for years, but you've never put like pen to paper. And I think this is an opportunity that we would love to see those people come out and just do the 10,000 words. I feel like we've got just under 2 months now as we're recording this before the deadline. And I think, you know, just go for it. I think if you even just have an inkling of an idea, like there's no harm because, you know, obviously it's free to enter. And I think we're just trying to reach as many kind of various different women who we can find in all parts of the country and in Ireland, of course. And I think we're just looking for fresh voices. And I think kind of, you know, whether that's kind of also in terms of, you know, not genre specific, obviously we've had fantasy, a lot of literary fiction, some amazing kind of contemporary commercial fiction in the past. I think as long as it can be defined as adult fiction, you're good to go. But yeah, for me, I think I just want something that surprises me. And I think even with Alice's, like when we were in the first round of the reading process, like when I read it and like read the first few paragraphs, I just had this feeling where I was like, I know this is going to be really good, and like talked about it through the whole process then. So obviously delighted we're here sitting talking about it. But yeah, I think just kind of anything that's a little bit unexpected, I would love to see personally, and kind of an interesting voice that I think really grabs my attention. I think we're in such a chaotic world at the moment, and I think it's a really special and rare talent for an author who has an amazing voice that just makes you concentrate and makes you want to forget about everything else you have going on and just sit there. So if I could find something like that, that would be amazing.
I want to ask you a little bit about synopsis, because as well as the 10,000 words, you need a synopsis. I think it says, is it about a page that you
yes.
need? I want to know how much you think people need to know, because if there are writers listening who are a bit nervous about synopsis side because they haven't finished the manuscript and they want to know how much about the story do you want to know in that synopsis?
Yeah, I think the synopsis can be quite a daunting task, and we don't intend it to be like that at all. But I do appreciate, as a writer, it might feel like that. I think for us, again, it's just a general trajectory of where it might go. We completely appreciate people, you know, obviously it might change if you've only got 10,000 words, and then by the time you've written the whole novel, it might look completely different and no one is going to hold you to that. I think it's just a general direction of kind of like, is the idea and the story, can it be sustained? Potentially for the length of a novel, but we wouldn't judge the submission solely on that. Like, we're judging it on the actual writing, those 10,000 words. So I think, you know, when you come to writing your cover letter and synopsis, like, obviously, you know, putting as much effort as you can into that is great, but the writing itself is going to be what, you know, we're really focusing on.
Yeah. And I think as well, am I right in thinking there are some resources that people can tap into for?
Yes. So both on kind of the Curtis Brown Creative website, there is a kind of wealth of information between like articles, interviews, you know, blog posts on kind of writing a cover letter, writing a synopsis, getting your 10,000 words ready, and also on the Women's Prize website as well. So there should be quite a lot online, but also, you know, our kind of inbox is open if anybody has specific queries that we can be helpful with.
I will link to those pages in the notes below. So if anyone needs to go read them, go read them. Don't let the synopsis stop you from entering, guys. Just whatever you do. I think that should be the biggest message.
Yeah, can I just say that my synopsis, the actual novel that's been published, is radically different from the synopsis. So yeah, I think really don't. It was useful to kind of force myself to think about where the novel was going, but. Yeah, no one had at any point ever said, no, you have to take this novel back. It doesn't match the synopsis.
Yeah. And I think even if we're like a week out from the deadline, like that's kind of actually when we get the bulk of our submissions anyway. So you don't even have to be super prepared. It might be that you have the kind of lull days between Christmas and New Year and you kind of want to have a think about it. Like one of my other authors, Paige Cowan-Hall, who was the winner in 2023, who's absolutely amazing. She submitted, I'm pretty sure, like the night before. So I think there's like, I think if you just have any inkling of wanting to do it, we would love to hear from you. And I think just going for it and seeing what might come of it is what I would advise.
That's right. Because also by the time you guys are listening to this, you can have at least 6, if not 8 weeks to get that submission in. So I want everyone to be doing it. Thank you very much. I can't tell you how many of my friends I have been like badgering each the last couple of years when the deadline's coming. Come on, guys, come on. But so, Alice, I would love to hear from you about what do you think, I would love to for you to kind of encourage the listeners to press send on that submission as someone who is not sure if they would ever have even gone down the submission process if you hadn't entered the prize. Tell me a little something that would get someone to do it.
I just think you've got nothing to lose. I know that writing and sharing your writing can feel like such a scary and vulnerable thing, especially if you've never let someone read it before. But honestly, everyone is so supportive. Everyone wants you to do well, and there is nothing to lose. You don't even need to tell anyone. I didn't. I didn't tell anyone I'd submitted until I got shortlisted. So really just do it, and don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good either. As Kira said, you know, they're looking for potential, they're looking for promise. They know that these are not published, you know, professional writers. So there really is no reason not to, and there is so much potentially to gain. I can't imagine a world now where I didn't submit, and I can't imagine not having the opportunities that I have today. So I am so grateful for whatever impulse it was that day that encouraged me to press send.
Niamh, would you add anything to that?
I think what I'd add is that the only person who can give you permission is you. I think we all have this secret hope that, you know, someone will swoop in and say, I've heard that you're the world's greatest writer. Can I please give you loads of money and publish your book? And the only way that that can happen is if you put yourself out there first. And I think particularly lots of women and queer people struggle to give themselves that permission. And as Alice said, this is a really low key way that you can do that. You can say, actually, my work, I have a hunch that this is good and that it might be something people would like to read someday. Mm-hmm. So I think that, yeah, I'd really say just give yourself that permission to hit the send button, and then you really never know what's going to happen. And I think that, yeah, for me, that the biggest thing I've gotten out of it is that kind of community of other writers. But again, for that to happen, you have to be putting yourself out into the world. You have to be sharing your work. So yeah, I think there's really, it's kind of a no-brainer to me that there's very little risk and there's potentially pretty big reward.
Beautiful. So just to remind everyone, the deadline is January 12th, 10,000 words plus a synopsis. It's open to all women in the UK and Ireland. That's right, isn't it, Kerry? UK and Ireland?
And the Channel Islands as well.
And the Channel Islands. I'm going to put all the links in the show notes. Please, please do get writing and submit. Kira, I bet you're dying to read all the submissions.
I am. Honestly, I feel like it's so incredible every year that I've done it, just the kind of length and breadth of creativity and kind of possibility that we dive into in the reading. So honestly, I'm so excited to see what next year kind of brings.
Thank you so much for all being with me today.
Thank you
for having us.
Thank you.
Chat.